Okay, what I thought I'd do with our last hour together is to some extent carry on with our reading of the final message of the bishops. But some of you expressed interest also in the letter that I wrote, my criticism of the draft that was proposed to the Holy Father. And also I thought maybe to expose you to the propositions as well. All of this is about how does the work of the Synod funnel into a final vision. And so we're working with several different sorts of things. Remember, the propositions were what were developed in the small groups and then eventually voted on by the whole body. And then the letter that we're reading is the body of bishops writing to the whole church. I don't know if I made that clear yesterday. Somebody asked me, who's the letter addressed to? Is it addressed to other bishops, was the question. I said, no, it's addressed to the whole church. Dear brothers and sisters, the whole church is addressed by these bishops who are finishing their synod together. And then finally, we hope for a letter from the Holy Father. But in the meantime, there's the behind-the-scene works of the criticism as well. What I'd like to begin with is just where we left off in the final message of the Synod, reading paragraph 6, which is a very nice one. And then I'm going to jump over to several propositions. The reason I finally decided to read you some of my letter was because you won't have any public access to that letter. And please remind me to turn off the mic when I read it to you. but you do have access to this letter online, and you would also have access to the propositions. So that material is available for anyone who wants it, whereas private letters are not. But let's get back into the mood of where we were yesterday by reading paragraph 6, which has the title, Seizing New Opportunities for Evangelization in the World Today. My hands are sweaty, so the thing won't move. All right. This serene courage also affects the way we look at the world today. We are not intimidated by the circumstances of the time in which we live. Our world is full of contradictions and challenges, but it remains God's creation. The world is wounded by evil, but God loves it still. It is His field in which the sowing of the word can be renewed so that it would bear fruit once more. There is no room for pessimism in the minds and hearts of those who know that their Lord has conquered death and that His Spirit works with might in history. We approach this world with humility, but also with determination. This comes from the certainty that the truth triumphs in the end. We choose to see in the world the risen Christ's invitation to witness to His name. Our church is alive and faces the challenges that history brings with the courage of faith and the testimony of her many daughters and sons. I find it, I don't know your reaction, but I find it to be a really good tone. And just doing it here during the summer conference that we're receiving from David Fogelberg, it seems to me to move very nicely with it. In a sense, a very positive view of the world and of creation, an acknowledgement of sin and the kind of damage that's there, and the announcement that there's a remedy for the evil that is besetting the world. And so I think you should know, I mean, the bishops are writing this letter to us, so let's try to receive a message like that. Let me jump from there, though, to some propositions. And these are actually propositions that my small group developed and that I had a hand in. You'll already recognize my themes. Proposition 34 and Proposition 35. If you wanted to find the 58 propositions that were approved by the Synod Fathers, you would find them by Googling Final Propositions, Synod 2012. Okay? And this comes up. Propositions are an ugly literary genre. Propositions were written by a committee. people speaking different languages or speaking one language but then having to have them all translated across the board. So they're not elegant language at all. Or elegant phrases get in there, and then this proposition from group 15 is like this, like from group 20, so they're pasted together at night. That's part of the process. So the propositions then need to be elegantly drafted in a way that the Holy Father can work on them and then put his own hand on it. That's the process. But I wanted you to see how far we got in these two propositions. The Eucharist must be the source and summit of the new evangelization. The Synod Fathers urge all Christ faithful to renew their understanding and love for the Eucharistic celebration, in which their lives are transformed and joined to Christ's offering of his own life to the glory of God the Father for the salvation of the whole world. That's all true. It's not bad. It's not especially well written. It's too long of a sentence. But the ideas are solidly there. Okay, it's half of those beautiful words and phrases were written in our group, and then somebody other else's group was there. But the point is there. What did I do? God the Father, even though. This is directly from our group. We stress this. And I said, like at coffee breaks, I can't believe nobody's talking about Sunday. So that's how you get that going. So even though there is a tension between the Christian Sunday and the secular Sunday, Sunday needs to be recovered for the new evangelization, according to Blessed John Paul's teaching in Dies Domini. John Paul II wrote a letter on Sunday to the churches, which is really beautiful. I don't know if you know that document. It's called Dies Domini, and you just want to renew your own way of living Sundays. Read the 25 pages of this letter. It's really beautiful. So we're pushing, hey, just, you don't even have to redo this, you just have to read it and do it. You know, I mean, the thoughts are already there. Sunday, with its sacred and special character, together with Sunday Mass, should be the center of Catholic life. Notice it's not just Sunday Mass. It's Sunday, the whole day, with its sacred and special character, should be the center of Catholic life. Full, active, and conscious participation in the liturgy on the part of the whole community is the goal. The liturgical year with its feasts should be followed by a true program of evangelization, especially at Christmas and Easter. Now here I can tell you what happens when scribal error occurs in a proposition or in any transmission of a text. What our group said was the liturgical year with its feast is the true program of evangelization, especially at Christmas and Easter. And it came out as should be followed by. This was horrible. I noticed it. It was a mistaken translation as it went through the ringer. I went back to the offices to say, you know, we asked how many people are involved. I said, it's a mistaken translation. This came from our group. They said, yeah. They wrote it down. I said, no, it's really pretty serious. Yeah. And I said, it'll be done. And it wasn't done. So, who knows? It's in my letter, but these things happen, huh? It's the world's messy. I can't imagine that you would say the other. But that's an error, and there's probably other errors in there. But just to let you know that's the inside scoop on a Proposition 34. All right? Yes.
Can I say something?
Sure.
I understand why. Okay.
Uh huh.
But aren't you afraid when you make a position like that of compartmentalizing? Really, that's what we do. That really, we say, okay, we have mass, and then we put our dress for mass, and then we have Sunday, and then we have the rest of the week, and it's not one or the other. Really. Mm-hmm. One is. So my concern when I read something like this is that Where are the other 6 days?
Yeah. That's a proposition that wants to stress that point, but that would surely put that in context, huh? These are just like, be sure this point is covered. Somebody will say what you said. You know, Dies Domini says what you say. But there is, Sunday is not the only day to be religious, but Sunday is an essential difference from the rest of the week that touches all the other days. That would surely be said. But you're not going to get much satisfaction out of propositions. That's the nature of the genre. But they're just listing concerns. So it's good you brought that up, because it just lets you know how to interpret the genre. Now, this is not a finished product. These are notes from the synod left on the Pope's desk. Liturgy is the next one. This is from our group as well, and other groups. Because if it were only our group, it would read more smoothly. But other groups. The worthy celebration of the sacred liturgy, God's most treasured gift to us, is the source of the highest expression of our life in Christ. It is, therefore, the primary and most powerful expression of the new evangelization. God desires to manifest the incomparable beauty of his immeasurable and unceasing love for us through the sacred liturgy. And we, for our part, desire to employ what is most beautiful in our worship of God in response to his gift. In the marvelous exchange of the sacred liturgy, by which heaven descends to earth, salvation is at hand, calling forth repentance and conversion of heart. Evangelization in the church calls for a liturgy that lifts the hearts of men and women to God. The liturgy is not just a human action, but an encounter with God which leads to contemplation and deepening friendship with God. In this sense, the liturgy of the church is the best school of the faith. So that's just good stuff to be sure that that's going to be in the final thing. All right. Yes, please.
When you write something like that, I think no one would be like, oh, we disagree. But what does that actually look like? And if, you know, is that now up to the priest who sometimes do and don't read this? Is it up to the choir director? You know, that kind of stuff. But is the point is just to make sure we don't forget?
Yeah. Again, I think what the point would be, very few people are going to read propositions. But if the Pope eventually has a final exhortation to the church, and that point is the Pope said, you know, many of the bishops who came here were concerned about this, then presumably a pastor has in hand a tool for saying, we're going to try to do this. We got a letter from the Pope after he met with bishops from every part of the world. So that's the way it hopefully would work. You know, it's like, I suppose if there are a billion Catholic believers in the world and all kinds of leaders, you know, great and small, it's like perhaps like buckshot. I don't know. You try to get as much of it out there, you know. Some people get hit and some don't. But somebody's going to get hit, you know, and that's... That's what work on this scale achieves, I think. Let's go now just to a sample of, I don't know quite how this is working. Yeah, there we go. A sample. This is Thank you. Ricardo?
Oh, we're getting into trouble again. And it's going back into this. And I don't know how to phrase it. What is the difference between a proposition and a thesis? And why, because theses are grounded on theological, where why, for me, the liturgical year with this feast is that's a thesis. It's not a proposition. It should be a thesis, because it's grounded in something like that. So why not to put these propositions, a thesis, when it's possible to do it?
I think probably, that's a good distinction. I think the group is so large, it's like you could do that, if you could say that to an individual student writing a doctorate. and say, you know, you're writing in the genre of proposition. I want you to write in the genre of thesis. But we're trying to get 300 bishops saying, focusing, what is it you really want to say briefly? And they call it propositions. So I think that's it, you know. So the propositions are full of information about what the bishops care about. But they're, from a literary point of view, they're not at at a high level.
Can we see how you finish it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pardon me?
I said I love Jeremy.
Yeah, yeah. I said, no, yours in, nonetheless, yours in Christ. Yeah. No. These are smaller points, huh? Probably the only thing worth reading, Joe, would be this, the real quick finish. Again, Your Excellency, I thank you for this opportunity to comment, and I hope that these remarks can be useful to a further draft of the apostolic exhortation. But if not for that, well, then in our continued efforts together to give solid theological foundations to the work of the new evangelization. Peace in Christ. So, Andy?
Maybe I'm the only one here about this, but I find this deeply troubling. Okay. And what I find troubling about this is I worked in a big company for a long time, and the church is a big organization, much bigger organization. And I think that your points are so central and so important that I'm concerned that anyone drafting anything wouldn't be closer to the mark.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, you know, that our corporate values aren't sufficiently aren't sufficiently inculcated and understood throughout the organization.
Yeah.
So tell me. No, Andy, everything's okay. But I find it because I think it's so fundamental. It's like, how is that possible?
Well, everything's okay, Andy. No. I myself was troubled, which is why I wrote the letter the way I did. But I would just say, no, there's no magic in the church, and somebody who wasn't up to it had the task, and there's something in place that stopped it. That's part of it too, huh? It's not likely to go forward after a letter like that. So that's part of the system too. It's troubling, but just actual people with their limitations do these things. And
So it's more of a limitation than the fact that there's groups of people who aren't as focused and as clear about the centrality of what you're talking about. I mean, that's you know, if you have the focus that pervades the organization, and the fact that these things can be developed, even mm-hmm. if there were some folks who weren't as perhaps competent or capable mm-hmm. in developing it, it ought to be closer.
Yeah, I think there. What I experienced from the synod itself was that there is more coherence around the central themes, but not a very good capacity to articulate. So that's one problem. And I also experience that sometimes in some of the departments in Rome, that people are moving hastily and getting jobs done, which is not right, but that can be a problem. So that's why I'm sort of saying it's not that the whole institution hasn't its focus. It means that sometimes it doesn't quite work right, and so something like that happens. Jay, I think, was going to comment on it.
Well, yeah, because I don't know enough about who's all involved, but if you took a pope who is on his last legs and that were to have been announced without a measure of energy and spirit behind it, it may have fallen on lesser impact.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a pope that's in charge who has more of a outreach at the street level, his characterization in mm-hmm. the press, and you throw powerful theology behind it, it may have more impact. So, I mean, I think your beautiful theology may add his lack of theology to reaching out to the least of his brethren. Mm-hmm. You go, oh, that guy's got it together. So it's a team game.
Yeah.
You've provided huge theology to a person that's got heavy energy for the street, is my characterization.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, that would be a providential scenario.
Absolutely.
You know,
and your gift that you said, I'm going to fire this off with great trust that it will be heard and done with what has been done, and hopefully he heard it.
It seems like new evangelization should be where his talent lies, anyway.
Yeah, well, yeah, and the last paragraph, you know, was really me throwing the bread on the waters in the sense of if it can't help for this. Well, then, in our continued efforts to give solid theological, I mean, we work on these things, so it won't be. Yeah, it's not the bad part. Yeah, Paul, what?
I want to go back to your first point. I assume that the people who put this together, there was good intention there, and you know, the thing, like, you know, we need to start with the resurrection. I mean, I wonder sometimes if I'm putting it out there too much when I tell my kids. This guy on the cross here, he rose from the dead, and he didn't rise from the dead. Doesn't matter where he came from or what he said. This is where, and there is a sense of in the face that, you know, people are like, well, I can't accept that. So maybe people want to start with the more saccharine, you know, baby Jesus and the shepherds and things. And so maybe that's their intent.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there is a sense in which, you know, we've got to put out there more bluntly, this is what our fundamental truth is.
Yeah, yeah. That's what your holy patron would do, St. Paul, you know, boom.
But if you do that, people might reject it.
Yeah.
The more strongly you put it out there.
Let us see if I remember where is. Yeah. Let's finish with a few more paragraphs of the message of the bishops. Because in terms of what's written, this is the best stuff out there so far, okay? And will there be an apostolic exhortation? I don't know. The propositions are interesting if you forgive them their lumpy style. But they are interesting as what the bishops care about. We don't have time for too much more, but at least let's roll through the paragraph titles. Evangelization, the family, and consecrated life. These are really nice statements, but things I think you know and have heard about, but well put about the family as a context. I'm going to skip over them. What's nice is that family life is treated in the same paragraph as consecrated religious life. And maybe that would interest you to see how that link is made right here. Family life is the first place in which the gospel encounters the ordinary life and demonstrates its capacity to transform the fundamental conditions of existence in the horizon of love. But not less important for the witness of the church is to show how this temporal existence has a fulfillment that goes beyond human history and attains to eternal communion with God. And then it goes on to say, that's what consecrated religious show in the life of the church. So that's nicely done, I think. The ecclesial community and the many agents of evangelization. Here there's talk about the parish as the central community that most people have access to. And then it speaks about the priest as a father and pastor of his people, other people that work in the parish, the laity, a special word goes out to them. This is a good paragraph here at the end of that. Witnessing to the gospel is not a privilege of one or of a few. We recognize with joy the presence of many men and women who with their lives become a sign of the gospel in the midst of the world. But I wanted to spend a little time on this paragraph, which I think is especially well done. The youth may encounter Christ. Again, let's refreshen ourselves in saying the bishops in the synod are writing to the church and they're talking about young people. What do they have to say? The youth are particularly dear to us because they, who are a significant part of humanity and the church today, are also their future. Just pause to remind you, this is Bishop Badejo, who that in the first draft of this letter read, the youth are dear to us because they are the future of the church. And Bishop Badejo beat on the bench and said, no, they are a significant part of humanity now and the church today. Anyway, with regard to them, the bishops are far from being pessimistic. Concerned, yes, but not pessimistic. We are concerned because the most aggressive attacks of our times happen to converge precisely on them. We are not, however, pessimistic, above all because what moves in the depths of history is Christ's love, but also because we sense in our youth deep aspirations for authenticity, truth, freedom, generosity, to which we are convinced that the adequate response is Christ. This is very well done, huh? And people working with youth get a lot of inspiration and encouragement from the wording here. And I think you feel the pastoral love of the bishops in these lines. Huh? Many of them, in their little 5 minutes, that's what they wanted to talk about, was young people and what we can do for them.
Brother Jeremy,
The adequate response to the aspiration for authenticity.
Just adequate?
Well, maybe a better word. They were writing quickly. What would you put?
Extravagant?
Yeah.
Perfect response.
Unique. Yeah, commensurate. Yeah, you could have another word. It's not a bad word, but do you desire authenticity? There's only one adequate response, Jesus Christ. I mean, you could say that, and it'd be pretty forceful if you said it that way, but I don't deny there could be other words, huh? It's an adequate response, and it could be a really perfect one. All right. Anyhow, this next paragraph, good too. We want to support them in their search, and we encourage our communities to listen to, dialogue, and respond boldly and without reservation to the difficult condition of the youth. We want our communities to harness, not to suppress, the power of their enthusiasm, to struggle for them against the fallacies and selfish ventures of worldly powers, which to their own advantage dissipate the energies and waste the passion of the young, taking from them every grateful memory of the past and every profound vision of the future. This is very strong, huh? And it's, maybe you could say, well, what are they even talking about for sure? It sounds good, but what are they talking about? They're talking about the way the culture is just destroying the way we think. And kids don't see a future. They don't see much, they haven't had much good happen to them yet, and they don't see a future, and that's not the way to be young. Being young is just so glad to be alive and so interested in the future. Who has that in our times? Huh?
Who did you hear expressing the most concern? What countries? About
youth,
or was it universal?
I wouldn't be able to remember it with a country. I think it was pretty universal.
And so there's different challenges.
A
myriad of challenges.
Yeah. So let's go on. The gospel in dialogue with human culture and experience with religions. And with religions. This is a very good section. I don't think we have time to go into it because I do want you to hear something else, but I want just to know what's here. I'm hoping you're going to all Google this and read it someday, you know. Anyway, know it's out there. Know some deep thought from our bishops was addressed to you, and I know you can't read everything. I can't read everything, and no one else can, but this is there, and it's a beautiful effort. Sorry for my hands are sticky. Very nice stuff here about the dialogue with culture, the dialogue between faith and reason, I know that I'm very interested in this part. Ricardo, this is a part for you, because Ricardo and I talk a lot about faith and reason and science and the dialogue with science. I mean, you mentioned this morning, Jay, about how science, you know, is saying, oh, wait, anybody that knows a little science would stop believing in God. Stuff like that, you know. Those are big questions dealt with in this section. Let's see, yeah. Faith and reason. Let's just read this one paragraph here. A particular field of the counter between faith and reason is the dialogue with scientific knowledge. This is not at all far from faith, since it manifests the spiritual principle that God placed in his creatures, reason. It allows us to see the rational structures on which creation is founded. When science and technology do not presume to imprison humanity and the world in a barren materialism, they become an invaluable ally in making life more humane. Our thanks also go to those who are involved in this sensitive field of knowledge. So the bishop's thanking scientists, and they mean it. That's good. Okay, then the next paragraph is art, then sickness and disease, talking about the art of medicine, then politics, other religions. The church considers the followers of, I would say, other religions as her natural partners in dialogue. One is evangelized because one is convinced of the truth of Christ, not because one is against another. It's an excellent principle for interreligious dialogue. Huh? If I desire someone in another religion to be a Christian, I'm not against them. I'll dialogue with them, and I will witness to this treasure that is Jesus Christ. That's how you dialogue in religions. It's no dialogue to say it doesn't make any difference, it's all the same. That's not dialogue. You haven't heard what I really believe if you say that. So that's what that means. Here's remembering the Vatican Council and referring to the Catechism of the Catholic Church. I've mentioned that before. That's what the Year of Faith really wants to pick up again. Get back to the documents of the Council, another round through that, for which the Catechism of the Catholic Church is a sure tool of interpretation. Contemplating the mystery and being at the side of the poor. This is interesting. In this perspective, we wish to indicate to all the faithful two expressions of the life of faith which seem particularly important for us for witnessing in the new evangelization. The first is the experience of contemplation, and the other is the face of the poor. Those are interesting to put those side by side. Contemplating Jesus Christ and being close to the poor. But I wanted to come to this. The letter to the churches in the various regions of the world. And they take a paragraph and address each continent. And as they were reading this final draft, it was very nice because different bishops took turns reading this letter in the assembly in different languages. And when they came to this section, then somebody where one of those languages was there read the letter, or somebody, and always somebody from the continent involved. Group address are the Catholic Oriental churches, so they're spread all over the world. Then the next group is the church in Africa, and its difficult circumstances are acknowledged. But let's spend a little time on what they say to Christians of North America, okay? All the bishops of the world, not just the North American bishops, but the bishops of the world looking at North America, hearing from North America, and now saying this. To the bishops of the Synodal Assembly, the bishops of the Synodal Assembly invite you, Christians of North America, to respond with joy to the call to a new evangelization, while they look with gratitude at how your young Christian communities have become generous fruits of faith, charity, and mission. You need to recognize the many expressions of the present culture in the countries of your world which are today far from the gospel. Conversion is necessary. from which is born a commitment that does not bring you out of your cultures, but leaves you in their midst to offer to all the light of faith and the power of life. In other words, we're not an enclave that's a safe, at least there's truth over here, where Catholics are. No, you stay in your country, you have many things working against the gospel, and you be in the culture as active players in the culture. That's new evangelization. And the bishops are saying, do that, we need that from you. As you welcome in your generous lands new populations of immigrants and refugees, may you be willing to open the doors of your homes to the faith. Faithful to commitments taken at the Synodal Assembly for America, be united with Latin America in the ongoing evangelization of the continent you share. That's a reference to a previous synod at the time of the millennium, when there was a synod devoted to each continent, the church in each continent. And as I always learned that North America and South America are two different continents, but there was one synodal assembly of the Americas, very beautiful synod, and a very beautiful letter from Pope John Paul II on that. So that's what that refers to. One last thing, and then we'll save a little time for comments. To see, here's Latin America, that's worth reading, but I'm going to skip it and let you see what they say to Europe, because Europe is the cradle of our Western Roman Catholicism. Let's look at the scene there. The bishops address a word of gratitude and hope to the churches of the European continent, in part marked today by a strong, sometimes even aggressive, secularization, and in part still wounded by many decades of regimes with ideologies hostile to God and to humanity. All of Eastern Europe under communism. Huh? Many deep wounds there. We look with gratitude toward the past, but also to the present, in which the gospel has created in Europe particular expressions and experiences of faith, often overflowing with holiness, that have been decisive for the evangelization of the whole world, such as rich theological thought, various charismatic expressions, various forms of charitable service for the poor, profound contemplative experiences, the creation of a humanistic culture which has contributed to the defining the dignity of the person and shaping the common good. It was this enormous wealth, the European Christian civilization. There's none of Europe is there without the gospel. That, you know, in present secularized Europe is saying it doesn't matter. And that's the scene they're speaking to. So may the present difficulties not pull you down, dear Christians of Europe. May you consider them instead as a challenge to be overcome and as an occasion for more joyful and vivid proclamations of Christ and his gospel of light. And just a sort of finale and the end. So look, that's a great thing. That's a blessing in our church that this synod happened, that material is out there. And I want you to know the level at which the church is working, and maybe just hearing this level again, Andy might call me. This is a good letter, huh? What went wrong was a draft. And I'm sorry that it did, but I don't think it's a sign that the whole thing is off focus. I think it was entrusted to probably to the wrong group. So anything to finish with? Beth.
So with your work with the new evangelization as an advisor to Archbishop Fisichella. Where do you see, it's whatever he asks of you, but what do you see, in your conversations with him, that office doing?
He himself is doing all sorts of things. He probably works on Sunday. I feel sorry for him. I tell him that. We're friends. We've known each other for 25 years. And he doesn't have time for friendship anymore, not in the sense of what he does. But I just say, that's crazy that we don't see each other as friends, you know. And I'm too busy, you know.
What country is he from?
He's Italian. But no, he's just, he's doing stuff on every front and encouraging, I would just, everything you can imagine that the church might be involved in, training catechists, developing programs, encouraging local churches, improving preaching, lots of stuff on catechesis. And he's got different advisors on different ones. I think I mentioned the other day that he asked me to be involved, especially for liturgy, and he's trusting me on to be involved for that reason.
Yeah. How old is he?
He's exactly my age. He's two months older than I am. Yes, so he looks 10 years older.
Yeah. I see this. The challenge that I'm hearing this week, a few things that are really speaking to me is that idea C.S. Lewis talked about time, and what you're talking about, this, the day of Sunday, and how our culture so works against it, and how it is, I mean, even what you just said about him, what he's doing is so important, he probably doesn't take Sunday off. And that's pretty much when we're trying to do our jobs, it is, that's what I hit up against, is like, how do I do a really great job in the time allotted to me? It's so tempting to just keep working because you see your goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is to change an entire culture to say Sunday or recreation or relaxation is vital. We all kind of, the same way we say that mothers do the most important job on earth, you know, we all say those things, but then these moms at home often feel that's not a real important job. I mean, it's a lot of talk, but I think when we get underneath the talk in the words, we often share that same, like, he's doing really important work. He probably works on Sunday.
Yeah. I think that that's why, I mean, it's part of my own strategy. I think it's, for me, this is a very important question. And it's one of the reasons I use the word, this is, I'm talking something that is countercultural. And we are products of our own culture. We're Americans. We're not just Catholics. Mm-hmm. We're Americans. And this, to me, is a problematic part of American culture. And so this move would be countercultural, and I just label it with that word to make us mindful that I'm talking about a pretty big shift. And you don't make a shift like that without a major effort and without some major foundations to really, you know, not just sort of like decide, it's not like deciding to go on a diet or something. It's a lot bigger than that, and you can't do it alone, although you can start in the domestic church of the family. Again, I recommend to you the letter of Pope John Paul. Dies Domini is the Latin title. I think it's probably called Day of the Lord would be. If you Google Day of the Lord, John Paul II, up she comes, a beautiful letter on Sunday. Rosemary?
I just want to say quickly, one thing that we do that I think really has changed the tone of our Sunday is that that's the day we go visit our beloved dead.
Mm-hmm.
And once you do that, believe me, it helps put work in context. If you go to the cemetery, especially right after Sunday Mass, and you go and visit.
Excellent, yeah.
It really just changes.
Yeah, thanks
so
for sharing
just
that.
Throwing that
out. Yeah, good one. Ricardo?
You answer it to some extent, but it is a beautiful letter. How we approach it and how we go
in
the conflict of, you know, the church has to adapt to the times without changing itself.
Yeah.
And it's not in there, but the how we do it.
Yeah.
It's very clear what we need, what we want to achieve, but how to achieve it.
Yeah. It's only a letter. It's not a program. And it's a letter that means to encourage, stir up, get some movement going.
Well, and as I was thinking about, gosh, how am I going to make this change with my kids? I got a little bit of hope saying maybe the kids are going to make it. Maybe bringing it to the kids and saying, you know, what do you think about this?
Yeah. The read again the paragraph on youth. That was really a beautifully stated paragraph, huh? Hey, we come to a crashing halt. We're out of time. Enjoyed very much being with you. Thanks for giving it.